Richmond would soon be well in hand. His opponent, P.G.T. Beauregard, had been summoned from the Carolinas by Jefferson Davis, and though Beauregard had a tendency to suggest strategies that seemed far more fantastic than workable, he was clearly superior to Butler. By May 18th, as Grant began to maneuver away from Spotsylvania, Butler was busy recoiling from a costly defeat that Beauregard had inflicted on the Federal troops at Drury's Bluff, southeast of Richmond. Butler seemed to believe that by pulling his army together into a compact position, he could make some effective show of confronting the outnumbered rebels and at the same time fulfill the boasts he was sending the War Department. But Butler had no appreciation for the geography of his position. He withdrew his army into his well-defended base at Bermuda Hundred, a peninsula below Richmond wrapped by the James and Appomattox Rivers. The mouth of the peninsula was pinched into a narrow stretch of land, which Beauregard immediately recognized as a perfect place for an outnumbered force to contain a much larger one. The Confederates rushed forward and dug a stout trench line across the narrow opening to Bermuda Hundred. Butler's army was thus hemmed in by the wide river and unable to dislodge Beauregard's troops. Instead of rolling a powerful threat toward Richmond, Butler had allowed himself to become, in Grant's words, corked in a bottle. With Butler now unable to divert Lee's attentions, Grant returned once more to the strategy of maneuver. Grant's ultimate goal had not changed. By again marching the Army of the Potomac toward Richmond, he knew that Lee would be forced to abandon the rebel trench lines, and once more, the Army of Northern Virginia could be brought out into the open. Between Spotsylvania and Richmond, the next major rail center in Grant's path was Hanover Junction, which sat just below the North Anna River. Should the Federals capture that rail junction, Lee's supply lines to the south would be seriously impaired. Naturally, Grant assumed that Lee would do everything he could to protect Hanover Junction, and the place to do that most effectively was along the line of the North Anna. As the two armies moved along parallel routes, both sought the advantage, a chess game of deception and feinting moves that for the most part simply didn't work. Numerous fights erupted along the way, none having any major effect. Nothing had altered Grant's intentions to force Lee into a major engagement, and nothing had changed Lee's desire to avoid one. Once again, Lee had the advantage of speed and maneuverability, and the race to the banks of the North Anna was won by the Confederates. Lee recognized that the only means to defeat Grant was a sudden surprise blow that might crush a significant and separate portion of the Federal Army. At both the Wilderness and Spotsylvania, Grant's commanders had demonstrated sluggishness and the utter failure to coordinate with one another. If Lee was to strike effectively, he had to rely on a repeat of that same kind of performance. Lee devised a plan where his army would fold back on both flanks so that only the tip of an upside-down V would actually rest on the river. If Grant attempted to cross the North Anna, a direct attack on Lee's troops would cause Grant to split his army along the V. Lee relied on Grant's lack of familiarity with the terrain, which along the river could be heavily wooded, rocky, swampy ground. It was the perfect place for Lee to spring a trap on a sizable portion of Grant's army. On May 24th, Grant's men began to fall right into Lee's trap. The Federal commanders had wholly inaccurate maps, and as Lee had hoped, the two flanks of Grant's army became divided. The geography near the river and Federal confusion created a dangerous situation for Grant. Once they moved south of the river, the two halves of the Federal army could support each other only by a circuitous route that would require two river crossings. It was exactly the situation Lee had planned for. But both commanders knew that a perfect plan on paper is rarely sustained on the battlefield. Lee's grand opportunity was to dissolve by the mismanagement of his subordinates, and by a stroke of fate Lee could not avoid. As the battle began to unfold, Lee was struck down with a severe case of diarrhea that so debilitated him he could not ride his horse. Lying prostrate in his tent, he had to rely on the efficiency of his three corps commanders, A.P. Hill, Dick Ewell, and Richard Anderson. But none of the three showed the skill or initiative to